open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary purpose is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Becky Reyes, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Spencer. The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers, followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given a 5-minute and a 1-minute reminder when it's time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Yvonne S.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Schulte, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. It's so lovely to see your faces. I have to tell you that, as you guys know, you take up a huge part of my life and have for decades now. And it is the highlight of my week to see you guys. And I know before long, we'll be back in person and playing ball and all of the things that we love to do. And I just, you guys really keep my spirits up seeing your faces. If you're new to, Marty, thank you so much for inviting me to do this. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, we have a great 10 minute after mine, and I'm really looking forward to our speaker tonight who hails from not far from where I hit my bottom. Anyways, if you're new, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is February 10th, 1994. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no interest in staying here. My plan was to stay here just long enough to get Child Protective Services off my back. I did not want to stop drinking, and I did not want to join a lame club like Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 21 years old, and I had much better things to do with my life. I had not started doing any of them yet, but they were just around the corner. And you know, and I find myself here all of these years later with a life that I could not have even imagined. I love to drink. I love the effect produced by alcohol. And I had my sister got me drunk when I was 4 years old. I wasn't a lush at 4 years old, but what happened for me, is that, when I was 11 years old, I had a really rough year, and I laugh about that, but it really, really was a really rough year. And I found myself at a girlfriend's house, and her older sisters were drinking from a bottle that said Seagram 7. And I remember at 11 years old, I wanted to get drunk with the big girls like I did with my sister. And I told them all that I could drink them under the table, and they laughed at me, but they gave me a liter of 7 and 7. And I blacked out that night. I don't remember what happened. I know I was in a house full of girls, so nothing bad happened to me. But I woke up I came to the next morning on a basement floor, a concrete basement floor, in a training bra with no recollection of what had happened the night before. And my drinking did not get much better than that. My mother noticed very early on that I had what she considered to be a dangerous relationship with alcohol. What I know today that I didn't know then was that what happens for me when I pick up a drink is that I cannot control how much I drink or when I'm going to stop. And my mother sent me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at 13 years old. My goal was to try to stay out of trouble. And I went off to study at New York University at almost 18 years old. And within 3 months, I drank myself out of NYU. And the last couple of years of my drinking were dark years. I bounced back and forth between cities. And towards the end, I found myself living in the DC area near my parents, pregnant, and with every fiber of my being, I wanted to be sober. I really did. I wanted to have a healthy baby. I wanted to be a good mother. I couldn't wait to have this baby of mine. And part of me, because I thought she would make me feel like a complete person once I had her. And so I really wanted to, and I had already lost the power of choice of whether or not I would drink, and I could not stop drinking. And that little girl was born and spent the first 16 days of her life detoxing in the neonatal intensive care unit. And I didn't mean to do that to her. And then for the first 9 months of her life, I dragged her in and out of places and in DC that had no doors, windows, running water, or electricity. And lucky for me, I woke up on September of 1993, $20 short, and called my mother. And I told her when she picked up the phone, and I heard my mother's voice, I said, "If you bring me $20, I'll let you have the baby." And my mother was more than happy to bring me $20 because she wanted to make sure her granddaughter was safe. And I'm so grateful for that, because that little 9-month-old baby was diagnosed with double bronchitis later that afternoon. And the doctor said she would not have lived a few more days. And I lost custody of that little girl, thankfully for her, thankfully for me. And I spent what I hope are the last few months of my drinking, wondering where she was, missing her first Christmas, her first birthday, her first words, and her first steps. And I my mother tracked me down in early 1994 and offered me a deal. My deal happened to look like a 1-year residential treatment facility for mothers and babies. The only reason I say that is because it was the only way they would get custody of my daughter back. She could come, my daughter could come there with me. And be in treatment, because we were going to be observed 24 hours a day. And so I didn't want to be sober, like I said, but I wanted that little girl back. And so I went into this institution, and I had a bad attitude for the for at least the first 11 months. I really did. And those women who helped me in that facility will still talk about it today, and I thank them every year. And here's the thing, is that I'm so grateful for that safe place that I was given the opportunity to get sober at. But if you're new, I want you to know that everything I've learned about how to be successful in life, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was introduced to a home group when I was 11 months sober. I walked into a meeting because I wanted to hear a speaker named Sandy Beach, and he was going to be speaking at this event. And I had heard him before, and he had made me laugh. And I wandered into this. It was the first time in my life I asked permission to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a pass from my treatment facility, and I went to hear him. And I don't remember him even speaking that night. What I can tell you is I walked into a room, and there were about 200 young people, and they were on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know, A, that young people got sober, and B, I didn't know that they wanted to be sober. And there was certainly some attractive feeling in that room. And women there gave me their phone numbers, and they invited me to go to meetings with them when I got out of treatment. And when I did a few months later, I showed up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful. And I didn't even know, with a year of sobriety, knowing absolutely nothing, I didn't know what a home group was. I'd never even heard the expression before. I didn't know that people got commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not very present. But a woman appointed herself, a young lady, actually. I was 22 with a year of sobriety, and she was I think 23 with 4 years of sobriety, and she appointed herself as my sponsor, and she got my feet moving, and my home group trained my feet. You know, they asked me to get commitments. And here's the thing, you guys, like, I spent my entire life, if I feel uncomfortable, I either drink or I run. Those are the only solutions I have. They work really well to a certain extent, you know, but that's all I have in my arsenal. And my home group taught me a lot of things. They told me to show up. They also taught me things like, to the extent I felt bad, I needed to be busier in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing is, you guys, I felt really, really bad. I did. And I don't know why I listened to this direction, but my sponsor kept explaining to me that until I felt good, it meant I had to do more in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result, I'm one of those people that just had to do a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's the thing, like, I didn't know that pushing a broom at a meeting at the end of the night would teach me how to be a straight A student in college. You know, I didn't know that showing up for that would teach me how to be a mother. But I can tell you that I was living in the projects, and all I wanted was to get out. And because of commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I went to school, I was a straight A student, and I got a scholarship to George Washington University for my bachelor's degree. And then I got into a conservative law school in Northern Virginia. And And I'm so grateful for that, because my mother died a few months into my starting law school, but she told me that she knew that her granddaughter was safe in my custody because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, like, I cannot believe, you know, I work now for one of the largest law firms in the world as litigator. And I go to court and I leave court when it's over. And from where I come from on the streets, like, that was not even within the realm of possibility for somebody like me. And you know, I love, you know, my best friend Kenna always talks about the 5-minute miracle. And here we have a 10-minute, right? A 10-minute with 1 minute left. We have a 10-minute miracle. And you hear what it was like at the end of my drinking. And you hear, you know, today I'm a lawyer, but there are 26 and a half years in there of Alcoholics Anonymous training me to be a good citizen, essentially. And here's the thing, you guys, I love you so much. You have been there for every single aspect of my life, for when I failed the bar, for when I passed the bar, for when my daughter ran away for 10 days at 14, for when she got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and became a member of this same home group on June 21st, 2008. You have literally walked me through everything in life, and I am so grateful, and I owe my life to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvonne. Our second 10-minute speaker is Dean B.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dean Brady. I'm an alcoholic, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight. I want to thank Marty for asking me to participate in my own sobriety. I appreciate it. And this is my home group, the Pacific group, and my sponsor is Thomas Sells. And I've been a member of this group for a couple years now. My sobriety date is September 21st, 1997. And that's probably not so important as September 20th. 1997. September 20th, 1997 marks a day following a lifetime of fear, severe self-centeredness that started when I was a kid. I don't remember actually when it started. I might be one of those people that feel like I was born that way. But growing up in a chaotic household, violence. I just remember having the feeling like I always wanted to be someplace else. And by the time I was 11 or 12, I had discovered a couple substances, including alcohol. And by the way, I lived in an Irish Catholic home, and there was no shortage of alcohol and fights, actually, too. But I had discovered these things at a young age, and started to dabble. By the time I was a young adult and my parents were divorced, had divorced years earlier, I really had started to make drugs and alcohol, a daily part of my life. Now, I don't think I had a problem with either one of them in my early years. But that's when I was thinking about it in terms of, well, is alcohol a problem? No, it wasn't a problem. I would learn later on, for you that are new, and by the way, welcome. I hope you stay. But for me, I would eventually find out that alcohol was my solution, 100%. Throughout my adult years, in my 20s and 30, early 30s. I tried to pull the house of cards down several times, but just by chance, I would always make it past that, like the luckiest guy in the world, you know, not lose a job, but get a promotion type of thing. And I landed a job in my 20s that was a secret military installation that will go nameless. And the good thing about that for somebody that is afraid is you're surrounded, and you have bars open 24 hours a day because there were three shifts of the military working. So it was a paradise for me. Every once in a while, I'd get off the site and come back at 4:35 in the morning, and now my drinking is starting to impact me. I'm taking cold showers every day to start the day if I slept at all. I came back one night, went through the military police, and they were laughing at me, and I thought they were just having fun because I was coming in late. But what I had done is I had gone off the road in a blackout and picked up a mile marker on my bumper of my car, and then came back on the road, and I'm going through this military checkpoint with a mile marker sticking straight up and down out of my bumper. And I would say at that point, I had started to lose control with my alcohol use, because that wasn't a one-time thing. I took a geographic. When things started to get bad, I wound up in another state, and my cycle started to repeat itself. I got a promotion, had a really high-paying job, management at that place. It was another government-related facility. And within 3 years, I would wind up quitting so that they didn't fire me. And coincidentally, the first job I got after that, just to make ends meet, was a delivery person for stationery at whatever minimum wage was or close back then. And I delivered to the same place I was management at. So I would always try to sneak in these different buildings, like just to get my delivery done and then go away. And the demoralization wouldn't stop there. I would eventually, as I'm going downhill, I would actually own my own company after that, just by a chance meeting. And even that, after a year, they were giving me a box and saying, here's a box, get your belongings, get out in 5 minutes. And before that, they'd given me an opportunity that, Dean, do you want to just leave, or do you want to work for the person you trained? And I chose to work for the person I trained. And it really didn't demoralize me that had to be the case, because I wasn't done drinking. And it was, so I think the book calls that working for a concern you once owned. So another geographic later, multiple times inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always felt uncomfortable when I first would make it in as a result of a bad situation regarding alcohol in my life. But somehow I knew that was my home. And sure enough, eventually I would stumble to a hospital with a trash bag in my hand, making a decision for a better life. I don't know if I'd made a decision to take the steps yet. It absolutely didn't, but I wanted something different. And I came up to the hospital with a trash bag in my hand, asking for help. And I haven't looked back since that date. If you guys are new and you're struggling in early sobriety, and this is like, or maybe it's your first night or two and your eyes are wide open, there's a lot of stuff that you cannot figure out in your life. Welcome. You don't need to figure it out. You can be among us, watch what we do, and follow what you see. And if you want what we have, I things will turn out all right. They won't be great. Things have not been fantastic throughout my whole sobriety. Even this most recent year at 23 years, post-divorce, during COVID, I just had to admit to my sponsor and my sponsee brothers at a big meeting, hey, I'm not okay. And the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous happened. And so immediately following that, I was reminded, get into more action. I think Yvonne, by the way, Yvonne, you did a great job. And she mentioned action. I've been in, thank God, my sponsors from an early time appointed me to service at an early age in my sobriety. And I've been grateful to do pretty much any position at the home group, and even been introduced to general service for a number of years for 2-year commitments. There would be no way you'd get me in a 2-year commitment You know, when I was early getting sober, I'm like, 2 years, what are you talking about? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing next weekend. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's taught me to be a kind person when I used to be an angry person. It's taught me to be loving when I used to not be loving. It's taught me to help unify and want unity over separation. And it never stops. So I want to welcome you guys again that are new. My whole life, I would have never thought that if I was standing here today at 23 years and you asked me when I had that trash bag, what do you want in 23 years? The last things that came that would come out of my mouth are an intentional day where I'm kind to the people I work with, and I'm kind to my neighbors, and I love my fellows. Well, that's the kind of day I had today, and this is continuing that. And I hope you find what you're looking for here. Just grab on and follow us. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Main speaker tonight is Vernon M.
I'm Vernon, recovered alcoholic, and I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be anywhere in the world doing anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an excited alcoholic. I'm blessed with the gift of recovery, and I want to thank the Pacific Group for asking me to speak, and especially my good friend Marty. And I want to thank Yvonne and Dean for doing an excellent job. I tell you, I looked at the time just now, and I know that I'm reading the senior edition of the big book, and I got a lounging chair in there, and I know I'm like 2 hours past my bedtime, but I'm glad to be here. And I didn't think like that when I got here. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing original. I need to share that. I mean, nothing original. Everything I had heard it from somebody else. It was all street talk. Didn't mean nothing, didn't add up to nothing, wasn't going to get me nothing. I grew up in this wonderful little gated community in Northwest Washington, D.C. First time I said that in the AA meeting, somebody that knew where I lived that screamed out, man, won't you just say you grew up in the projects? It's okay. I got reduced to mere mortal that day. And in my childhood, I had a childhood something like Dean. I saw a lot of violence, saw a lot of things that a young man shouldn't see. Watched my mom get cut and beat, and had an absentee father. And I learned early how to not trust and be self-reliant. And what I also learned early was they had this thing in my family, this stupid saying that I used to hear it a lot from my friends too. They say, what happens in here stays in here. But they would expose me to everything. And they placed an expectation on me as a young man, and I shut down emotionally. Didn't know how to talk outwardly, so I held it in. And I began to go through life just like that. I was very, very angry. My mother had 10 kids. I always thought she had 9 kids too many because I'm very selfish and self-centered. Just going on about life, just trying to figure it out. And I always got third-party everything, third-party shirts because they got passed down third-party shoes. And you know, in school, that wasn't a good thing because kids were cruel. You know, they would joan and say things, and I couldn't handle that. So I began to act out in school, and I began to fight, and I began to do things. And I remember at 10 years old, my aunt came to live with us, and she was a church-going lady. I had never heard the words love in my life. They may have showed it, but I couldn't see it. Too selfish to see it. And she came to live with us, and when she came to live with us, something happened. She began to display love and affection, but she never said the words. And I just wanted to hear it. I wanted to hear it so bad. And I began to do stuff and act out. I was one of those kids that was, I lived a double life early. You could not punish me. I'd rather take the whipping. You know, you punish me, I'm gonna jump out the window. I'm gonna run, and my disobedience will run me right into a car and get run over by a car. Get out of the hospital, you punch me again, I jump out the window, run out the house, get shot in the eye with a paperclip. Every time I was disobedient, something seemed to happen. I hear in this program that God ain't gonna give you more than you can handle. I believe God gave me more than I can handle early because he needed me to rely on him because I was so self-reliant. And what happened was I began to do things and hang out with people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with. You know, it's one thing when you win one thing as a child and everybody looking down on you and everybody on the other side of the street wearing glitter and it looked good to me. And I remember growing up in that environment that I talked about and, you know, you ain't hear people talking about their feelings and feeling inadequate in that environment. You wasn't gonna say that. That probably gets your pockets picked every day. And it was a tough place to grow up at. And I remember at 13, I took my first drink. I put a little change in and something about when you put money in to buy your first drink, it has more meaning and more weight and depth. You know what I mean? And what happened was I took that first drink and just like Bill Wilson, I had arrived. I had found what I had been looking for all my life. And I chased that feeling forever. At 15, God took my honor away from me. I didn't understand that. I was angry, restless, irritable, and discontent. I was frustrated. And I told myself that day that I wasn't going to pray or none of that stuff. And I didn't know when I told myself that I had separated myself from God. And when you separate yourself from God, you get everything that's coming down the pipe. And what happened was I began to drink like to every bad feeling, good feeling, the sun shining. Any opportunity I had to drink, I drank. And it worked for a minute until it stopped working. And when it stopped working, I remember sitting in this park on New Jersey Avenue in Washington, D.C. I like to talk about what I'm going to do to get my life together when my money runs short. Long as I got money, I ain't thinking about getting my life together. But when my money runs short, I always talk about what I'm going to do. And this particular day, I'll never forget it. It seemed like it was yesterday. It was a guy came past with a flyer to a program called Clean and Sober Street. And I began to lie and say things to this guy and got a flyer, threw it at him, talk a little trash. Because by this time, I was reduced to sleeping on my mother's couch in my mother's living room. And my brother and sister was running in and out the front and back door. My stepfather drank one time a day, all day long, in his lounging chair. And I had to deal with all that because when I move in with people, I do things within the households that get me put out. And I remember they had 21-day program or 21-day meeting thing that you had to get. And I went to those meetings for 21 days and got to the intake that day, but I told my mother a lie. I told her that they told me to come down there at 6:30, but they told us to get there at 5:30. First time I could see, looking back, that God was working in my favor. I got there, they hadn't even started letting people into that intake. I got into that intake, and they had me to come in first, and they asked me one question. They said, do you have a problem with drugs and alcohol? And I said, no. And they sent me out, and they told me to hold on, and they seen the other 68 people. Then called me back in, and without hesitation, I said, yes, I don't know where that came from. But the words came out of my mouth, and I said, yes, and they let me in that program. And I need to say this, I'm a real alcoholic. I needed to go to treatment, and I need to have my ego smashed because I knew everything about everything. I was a genius. I just couldn't prove it. And I got in that program, and 2 weeks into that program, I became a counselor in my head. I was doing everything except writing prescriptions. You would come in my cubicle, I would cross my leg, and I would dissect what you say, and I would give you a note, tell you to do this, and go ahead and about your way. And the person that was running that program came to my cubicle, and she sat down, and she told me two things I never forgot. She said, if you want to stay here, Vernon, this program been working just fine before you got here, and we need you to wear something in the encounter group tomorrow. And they had me wear this sign around my neck. And the sign said, this guy might be too clever for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was humiliated. King James the baby had been reduced to mere mortal. And what happened, I was sitting there and I felt bad. And I stayed in that program and I fell in love. She was white and I was black. And I told myself we was going to have beautiful kids. But I convinced me that I needed to leave that program. And I left. And what happened was I went right back to that house when my sister was running in and out the front door and my brother was running out the back door and my stepfather was in that chair. He drank one time a day, all day long. And I had to sleep in the midst of that. But by this time, I had been talking to this guy that was coming to the meeting. And I called this guy. First time I ever called a man to ask for some help. And he told me to meet him at the meeting the next day. And the miracle started. It was the first outside meeting I went to at the Metropolis Club. I got to that meeting. I heard the most beautiful and sweet words I had ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a greeter at that door that morning. And he said these words to me. He said it very slow and methodically. He said, come on in, son. Get a cup of coffee. Sit down. It's going to be all right. And I don't know if that means nothing to y'all, but that meant the world to me. Because where I came from, ain't nobody say, come on in. Wasn't nobody asking me to come. But that guy said, come on in, son. Get a cup of coffee. Sit down. It's going to be all right. From that first day at that meeting, that outside meeting, when I left treatment, I got a sense of belonging that day. I felt the love and unity of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. I sat in that meeting, and I like to talk about other people when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know how to talk about me. And I sat beside the wrong guy. And I began to talk about the speaker like we were first cousins, like I knew him. And the guy, I said, man, that man always shit up my first meeting. He said, well, when you going to bring something to the meeting, son? My first resentment in Alcoholics Anonymous, I told myself I was going to never sit beside that guy again. Moved my seat the next day. It was one seat left in the house next to me. He sat right beside me. Before I could open my mouth up, he went and bought a big book. And he signed it and he gave it to me. And he told me, here you go, son. Take this home and read the first page. And if you come back to this meeting tomorrow, let's discuss it. And when I took that book home and I read that book, looked on the first page of the fourth edition, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you got one, you know ain't nothing on that page. I couldn't wait to get back to that meeting and tell him how stupid he was. I got back to that meeting and I said, man, ain't nothing on the first page. He said, yes, I know. He said, that's just about how much you know about this program. Don't try to add nothing to it or take nothing away from it. That guy became my sponsor. That guy told me, he said, can you be ready at 7 o'clock on Saturday? And I said, yeah. He said, we're going to a meeting. He picked me up and we would ride. That first meeting that he picked me up, we rode from DC to Delaware. He was leading the meeting. And this guy was a pimp in his prior life. And he began to tell me his pimp story. And I began to listen to it because I was fascinated by it. I had never heard nobody talk like that. And he began to open up the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with his sharing because it was so honest. I had never heard that. And then when he brought me home, he said, next weekend, I got somewhere else to go. Can you go for the whole weekend? I said, yes. And he picked me up and we rode to New York and he was speaking. And something miraculous happened when we came back, on the way back. He pulled over on the side of the road on the highway. He had to use the bathroom on the highway, so he had to go. And when he got back in the truck, he looked at me and asked me one question. He said, Vernon, let me ask you a question. I said, what? He said, what hurts? And I began to cry. And I don't know why. I began to cry and I began to talk to that guy. He said, could you meet me every Tuesday? And I said, yeah, that guy's name was Freddie Welch. He was my sponsor for 13 years. This man showed me unconditional love like nobody had ever showed me love. This man would take me places. He would talk to me. He would teach me. And one of the things he taught me about, he said, burning inside of you is a treasure, but you got to look deep and search hard. And you got to keep coming to find it. And every Tuesday I would meet him and we would read a couple of paragraphs or a couple of pages out of the big book. And he would tell me things about himself. And every time I would bring him a problem, he would say the same thing. He would say, Vernon, along this journey, somebody in this process is going to have to practice some humility. Why not you? And I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, the only thing you need to know about humility is that you can't claim it for yourself, because that's an arrogant statement. And I began to listen to this guy. And I began to talk to this guy. And in my third year, I lost 9 family members in 18 months. And he took me to We Agnostic. And in We Agnostic, he said, and it says this, it says, now we have to fiercely face the proposition that God was either everything or he's nothing. And he asked me that question, and I told him God is everything. And he told me these words. He said, well, we all got a day, Vernon. And I didn't know what to say. And he said, what I did, he told me exactly what he did when his father died. He said he put one hand in God and one hand in Alcoholics Anonymous, and y'all carried him through. And I commenced to do the same thing. And what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous was a light beyond my wildest dreams. I got the AA and I didn't know what to expect. And I found people that were sticking to our singles of purpose. When I didn't have no money, people would take me to eat. When I didn't know what to do, people would tell me what to do. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was $60,000 in debt with the Internal Revenue Service. My sponsor pointed a guy out in the meeting. He said, go talk to that guy. I went and told that guy and talked to him. That guy told me exactly what to do. In my ninth year, the IRS sent me 2 checks back. I didn't understand it. Every step of the way, everything I know about this journey, somebody else taught me. I got married before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know that why my relationships kept failing until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. My relationships kept failing because I didn't know how to relate. And what I'm talking about, it's hard to relate to somebody else when the only perspective you can see is yours. And I couldn't see that she would say something, and I couldn't think about her dominating the conversation. I would do stuff like ask her how she's doing and then tell her how I'm doing. As soon as she opened her mouth, I wouldn't let her get a word out. And what happened was my sponsor taught me how to respond rather than react. Because I was walking around in this program, I was so reactionary. Every time somebody would speak to me, I would react. I wouldn't know how to respond. And he would ask me questions like, he'd say something to me like, that's a nice hat. And because I never had none, I had to tell him how much it cost. And I said, well, it cost me $60. And he told me that one time, he said, it's a damn shame, Vernon. I said, what? He said, it's a damn shame. You got a $60 hat on a penny head. And I thank God that he helped to reduce my ego by helping me to deflate it. And what he did for me was he put me right into the steps. And I'm a guy that believes in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in connecting with other people. I believe in learning and I believe in growing. I don't know nothing about maintaining. That's what he taught me. He said, this program ain't to be maintained. This program is about continuous growth. And I found in the steps of life beyond my wildest dreams. He taught me that the first 2 steps were the conclusions of the mind drawn from the doctor's opinion, didn't require any action, only acceptance. If I could look at my alcoholism and I could see the destructive ways of what the alcohol did to me, I was sane. But if I could look at it and I couldn't see that stuff, that I was insane. And he told me that in that third step, it wasn't just about going on with the rest of the program. It's about me being willing to go through the growing pains of not having my way. And it also taught me that there's 2 firsts in that step. One of them is the first requirement that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And the other one was that we had to first quit playing God. It didn't work. And when I looked at my life, at the sum total of my life, I had always lived my life on unsatisfied demands, and I always tried to run other people's lives. I always knew what was best for you and how you need to do it, but didn't know what was best for me. When I got into the inventory, I began to look at certain things in the inventory. And what he had me look at was those resentments. And he told me a story, and I never forgot it. He said, Vern and I had hated a guy for 30 years. And I said, yeah? He said, yeah, 15 of them, he was dead. And I said, man, how can you do that? And I didn't understand what he was trying to say. What he was trying to tell me that we hold on to stuff long past the expiration date. And if I wanted to get better, I needed to do just what Sandy Beach used to talk about. Sandy Beach described this program with 2 words, let go. And I loved that. In my inventory, I found out how selfish I was, how I like to run everything and control everything. And I also looked at how resentment ran my life and how I was so fearful about my life, about making progress in my life. Then I sat down with him when he made a date for me to come to his house. And he had to tell me that I was a man of integrity. I said, why you say that? He told me that I met the obligation. I asked him what he mean. He said, I set a time for you to be here and you came. And that was something real, real important to me. And when I looked at it in that step, it talked about when he was trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator. Well, how we getting to pray like everything depended on me and work in this program like everything depended on God. Through every step, I carried the creator with me. In 6 and 7, the sixth step, it talks about our limited objectives. It talks about our limited objectives and how we need to move towards God's will. And then in 7, it talks about our deep objectives, to be at peace with ourselves and with our fellow man. And I know I wanted to be at peace with other people, but I didn't know how to do that. And my sponsor said, if you want to do that, you got to keep the channel between you and God clean. And I found in the steps that it was always too much of me between me and you, and that it was always too much of me between me and God. When I got into the 8th step, I looked at my wretched conduct one more time. And what I found was, I still was that same guy early recovery that liked to have a wife and 6 girlfriends because it supported my ego and my low self-esteem and low self-worth. And my sponsor told me, he said, Vernon, remember that list that you wrote about what you want your higher power to be? And I said, yeah. He said, you remember the qualities that you said you wanted to have? And I said, yeah. And what the qualities were, I wanted to be loving, caring, kind. I wanted to be patient and gentle. He said, you ain't none of those things to yourself or other people. And what he did was he took me back to the 7th step. And he had me to ask God to remove that stuff all over again. And this time I meant it. When I went into the 9th step, I had possessed myself of the right attitude to go to my mom. All along this process, I've been telling her that I love her because he told me to tell her that I love her every time I talk to her. And when I got into the 9th step, she was the first one on my men's list. And when I went and prayed with her, she allowed me to do that because she was a praying woman. She is a praying woman. And I prayed with her. And before I can get the words out, she said these words to me. She said, I love you, son. And I'm proud of you. And then she asked me something that I couldn't do. She said, could you help your brothers do what you're doing? And I said, Mom, I can't help them do what I'm doing. What I can do is I can ask them to go with me for where I go, and I can turn them over to y'all. And she gave me this look. I don't know if I created a harm or not, but she gave me this look. If looks could kill, she would have killed me. In the 10th step, what happened was I looked at that selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it talks about when these crop up, we ask God that wants to remove them. What I had to add to that list was at the end of it, I had to add my rights, and I had to add neglect, and I also had to add my expectations. Because my expectations always set me up for resentment. Every time I place my expectations on you, you couldn't meet the demand, then I resent. Then I say something to you and you retaliate, then I wanna throw a tantrum. So what I learned in this process that in our 11th step that my 11th step is only effective as effective as my 10th step. If my 10th step practice is genuine, my 11th step will be all right. And I also, I learned that 6 and 7 also helps me keep the channel open between me and you and me and God, along with the 10th step. The steps have helped me to get a wonderful life. And I found in our 12th step that it's just not about doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this was really important for me. And I share this for new people and people with time, because I began to treat y'all better than I treated the people that I harmed the most. I began to make excuses about why I couldn't go to the dinners and couldn't go to the family outing. And my sponsor helped me with that too. He said, Vernon, go late and leave early. And it helped me to understand that the people I harmed the most need to get some of the best of me. You all were getting the best of me, but they didn't. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a way out on which I could absolutely agree. And one of the greatest gifts I've gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous is fellowship. My sponsor told me early in this process that the fellowship was sick and we had a program of action. He said, but you're gonna need the fellowship. And I've been leaning on y'all since I've been here. If I don't get too smart between now and the 14th of next month, I have 21 years of sobriety. I was telling somebody before the meeting, I'll be legal, but I don't want to drink. I ain't found nothing in my life that drinking makes better. Two things happen when I drink. I take a drink, then I take another drink, and then the crime rate go up. Because I'm going to commit a crime. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Since I ain't had a drink, I ain't been homeless. Since I ain't had a drink, I ain't been broke. Since I ain't had a drink, I ain't took a hostage. Since I ain't had a drink, I ain't stole nothing. Since I ain't had a drink, I ain't robbed nobody. Since I ain't had a drink, ain't nobody been looking for me. Since I ain't had a drink, the IRS sends me a check every year. And in sobriety, I've gotten remarried. And one of the blessings of being in sobriety and when I got remarried, I was prepared for it. I was armed with some facts about myself. I knew how to treat somebody with dignity and respect. I knew how to be sensible, tactful, and considerate. The 10th step taught me how to be courteous, kind, and practice some justice and love. I try to keep harmony in my relationship with my wife, most of the time by shutting my mouth. And I'm learning if I want to have a good life and a healthy relationship, sometimes the answer is just real simple, two words, yes, dear. And when I say those words, I don't say them because I want to be funny. I say them because today in my life is more about peace than it is about problems. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was running from people, problem, pain, commitment, and responsibility. Today, I face people, absorb pain, I take on the responsibility, I handle my commitment, and I trust God with all that. When I got here, I hated God. Today, it ain't like that. My life is good, not because of what I say, it's because of what I do. And what I do a day at a time, I go to a meeting every day. Since Zoom, I love Zoom. I need to say that. I love Zoom. And I go to at least four meetings a day and I work from home. And I do that because I love meetings. I love going and hear people say the same thing, but just in different languages, in different states, in different countries. It doesn't matter. Because we speak the language of the heart. And one of the things I really love about this program is that I don't ever have to be alone again. I don't have to do nothing alone. If I hurt, I can say I hurt. In July of this year, my 20-year-old nephew got gunned down. In February of this year, I went to my mother's house. My mother had two strokes in 2016, and she's bedridden. And now I am her POA, and I take care of all of her business. And I went into the house because her nurse called me and told me she couldn't get in. I had to bust the door in, and I found my brother laying in the kitchen dead in my mother's house. I lost four friends, four real good friends that were friends from Alcoholics Anonymous during this pandemic. But I'm not talking about death. I'm talking about how God has allowed me to match calamity with serenity, because that's outside of me. In my meditation after my friend David died, my meditation, God met me right at the level of my need. And he showed me through action that I was on the right track. We all have a day. The difference today in my life, I let God do his business and I do mine. My job is to make the plan. God plans the outcome. I don't get that mixed up. And I don't get you all mixed up either. You all are my resource. God is my source. I don't get that mixed up. When I got here, I used to measure myself with other people. Now I measure myself with myself. I understand that measuring is a disease. Today, I can look at my growth. Every 3 months, I set, at the end of the year, most of the time, I set a goal for myself. And every 3 months, I check that goal. My current sponsor has me doing it. I do an inventory every year before my anniversary. And I target a different area of my life. Because I know that the trash can gets full. And if it's fishing, it's going to smell. What I have to do at a day at a time, I keep watch on the guy that I drank for. I still got a brain that I can't trust almost 21 years later and left alone by myself too long I'll compromise myself. I thank Alcoholics Anonymous not only for the gift of sobriety, but for the friendships that I've had. And I'm gonna read something really quick, and it's in the, he sold himself short. It says, where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I should always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me up from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. One of the greatest gifts about service I found is not in what I do, it's in listening to new people. I love the newcomer. I sponsor several men and women because my motive's right today. And my motives wasn't right when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But my motives are right today. And what I found in this process is that I don't ever have to do anything alone if I keep a watchful eye on myself. And I trust y'all. And I do trust y'all implicitly with my life. So I'm grateful to be here. And I want to thank this group for having me. And I also want to say this. Doing step work will give you sight, but practicing it as a way of life will give you vision. It's an injustice to be in this program with sight and no vision. I was blind when I got in. I'm not blind anymore. And I thank y'all for 12-stepping for y'all having me tonight.
AA birthdays at the meeting. We define
Patrick Stewart, alcoholic.
Oh, there he is. We define birthdays as sobriety from freedom from alcohol, pill, pot, anything that affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting, you'd like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P, at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. My name's Ann. I'm an alcoholic.
All right, please email her before 6:30. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to be recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. This week, we have asked a special guest to sing us a birthday song.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AA. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
Woo-hoo. All right. Our birthday celebrants tonight are.
It's up there.
Okay, I don't see it. Please help me.
Okay. Girl. Okay, I am not sure how to pronounce this name, Morgan.
That's Banu.
Banu P with 1 year and Ashok is his sponsor. Brendan M for 1 year and Paul J is his sponsor. Mark A for 2 years and Tom B is his sponsor. Charlie P is celebrating 11 years and Thomas S is his sponsor. Nancy J is celebrating 35 years and Sharon C is her sponsor. That is a total of 5 birthdays for 50 years of sobriety, which is an average of 10 years.
All right, thank you, Georgia, for saving me. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our birthday cakes. At the end of the year, this is our this candle money is our contributions to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org.